So we continue our studies looking at the life of Joseph. And last week we saw, as we looked at his life, the difficulties and challenges that he had faced and what we all face in our lifetime. And the question of how we respond to those challenges is so important. It's probably not escaped your attention that there's some kind of football tournament going on at the moment. The European Championships, delayed from last year, are taking place across Europe as well, and it's on the TV all the time, and some of you are enjoying that, and some of you are probably bored stiff of that and are frustrated that you can't watch your normal programs at your normal time because of the interruption of games being shown. Back in 1996, England reached the semi-finals of that European Championship, and the game had ended with Germany all square at the end of extra time, and so it went to penalties. Gareth Southgate, the current England manager, stepped up to take the sixth penalty for England, and it was saved, and Germany then scored their goal and won and went through to the final. It isn't something you easily forget, at least not in England. Every time there's a World Cup, every time there's a European Championship, the hype starts again, and the talk is about this team being the best team and being able to win tournaments. And every time it happens, we always go back and we show the what's happened historically. And you know, even this last week, I've seen that penalty missed by Gareth Southgate probably half a dozen times on various programs. Fast forward to 2018, and England were playing in the World Cup in Russia, and they met Colombia in the last 16, and that game also ended all square and went to penalties. For the first time at a World Cup in England's history, they won a penalty shootout. But what may have been missed and what may have been forgotten is how Gareth Southgate went over to the Colombian player, Matias Uribe, to console him. Matias was the guy that had missed the penalty for Colombia that basically handed England the victory. Gareth Southgate understood what that felt like. He understood that pain that guy felt, perhaps even shame. He understood what it felt like to have the hopes of a nation resting on your shoulders and to come up short. Now, whether you agree with Gareth Southgate's tactics, his style of play, or even his team selection, and let's face it, probably none of us do, because that's just how we operate, isn't it? We all have our own opinions, and that's clear when you talk to anybody who likes their football. Everybody has their own opinion. But what has been very refreshing about Gareth Southgate as the England manager, in what has been, for me, obvious as I've looked in on that and seen how he interacts with the other players and see how the players talk about him as the manager, is the way that he has managed the team, the way that he has exemplified in his character a man of integrity, ability to manage players with egos, but also players that need an arm around their shoulder and need some encouragement. He kind of seems to manage people well. A few years ago, he recorded a TV program just up the road at the Abbey Stadium here in Cambridge with other ex-professional footballers and the Duke of Cambridge. And the program was all about mental health. And he spoke quite candidly about that penalty miss and how that affected him mentally and the barrage of abuse that he got on the back of that. It's clear when you listen and watch and observe that Gareth Southgate has used that experience and those experiences of his formative years as a player to shape the man that he is today, to make him the manager that he is today. And in 2018, he visibly demonstrated to the Colombian national team, but also to the world watching, his compassion and concern for other professional footballers. How do we respond when we face tough times? How do we use those times? How do those times shape us? Do we allow those times to shape us for good or for bad? Today we continue the story, as I said, of Joseph, and we see how he responded to what happened in his life and how he responded to when he became free from prison, which is where we left him last week, and it's where we're going to pick up the story today. So reading from Genesis chapter 41, and we're starting at verse 1. When 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile, when out of the river there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the 7 sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. I'm not going to sing this, for those of you who are wanting me to. Verse 5, he fell asleep again and had a second dream. 7 ears of corn, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other ears of corn sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin ears of corn swallowed up the 7 healthy, full ears. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled, so he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Today I am reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as they interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was impaled." So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream, and no one can interpret it. But I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." "I cannot do it," Joseph replied to Pharaoh, "but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "In my dream, I was standing on the bank of the Nile, and when out of the river there came up 7 cows, fat and sleek, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows came up, scrawny and very ugly and lean. I had never seen such ugly cows in all the land of Egypt. The lean, ugly cows ate up the 7 fat cows that came up first. But after they ate them up, no one could tell that they had done so. They looked just as ugly as before. Then I woke up. In my dream, I saw 7 ears of corn, full and good, growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other ears sprouted, withered and thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin ears of corn swallowed up the 7 good ears. I told this to the magicians, but none of them could explain it to me. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good ears of corn are 7 years. It is one and the same dream. The 7 lean, ugly cows that came up afterwards are 7 years, and so are the 7 worthless ears of corn scorched by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine. It is just as I said to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow them. Then all the abundance of Egypt will be forgotten and the famine will ravage the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered because the famine that follows it will be so severe. The reason the dream is given to Pharaoh in 2 forms is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. And now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take 1/5 of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of those good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. This food should be held in reserve for the country to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so that the country may not be ruined by the famine. The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, "Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He made him ride in the chariot as his second in command, and people shouted before him, "Make way." Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot in all Egypt." Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zaphnath-Paneah and gave him Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, to be his wife. And Joseph went throughout the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence and traveled throughout Egypt. The word integrity is defined in the Random House Dictionary as adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, honesty, the state of being whole, entire, or undiminished, a sound, unimpaired, or perfect condition. In Joseph, we see a man who exemplifies and who models for us what integrity looks like. Last week, we saw, when we looked at the passage before, the chapter before, at those three experiences that Joseph had where he could so easily have felt abandoned by God. 2 years had fully passed, and Pharaoh had a dream. This is the experience. This is the third of those experiences. The first one, obviously, was when he was misunderstood and mistreated by his family. The second was when he had been falsely accused, and the third, this occasion where he'd been forgotten. But as we saw last week, Joseph didn't allow those three experiences to make him bitter. Rather, he remained faithful both in the palace of Potiphar and in the prison where he was serving. He trusted in God and recognized God had a plan, even if he, Joseph, didn't know what it was. Did you notice that Potiphar said, Pharaoh said of Joseph in the passage we just read, "The Spirit of God is upon him"? Pharaoh recognized that here was a man of God. He trusted in God. He recognized that God was sovereign. In the pain of those moments and experiences, which are tough and hard to take for all of us, there is a place whereby if we submit to God and allow God's Spirit to come within us, if we have the right attitude towards us, integrity is forged in our characters. And we saw that at the end of last Sunday. Those painful times become for us a refining fire, a purifying place where the character is honed and shaped and our lives become a little bit more right and complete and a little bit more honouring to God. So may we, like Joseph, see those difficult and challenging times, those painful times, as times of growth, of times of purification. Joseph spent 2 years waiting for his message, which is recorded in chapter 40, verses 14 and 15, which we saw last week, which he passed on to the cupbearer. He waited for 2 years for that message to be passed on to Pharaoh. Now here he is, summoned to the palace. He is charged with this great responsibility. He's been taken out of the prison, washed and shaved. You know, the Egyptians were a clean-shaven nation, so he had to lose the beard. So washed, shaved, and changed, and is brought into the presence of Pharaoh. Now, it's probable, we don't know this, I'm just surmising, that it's probable that Joseph had given a bit of a heads up as to what was going on, because all of those around the palace would have known something was happening, because Pharaoh had woken up in a bit of a troubled state. The magicians and wise men had kind of been summoned to the palace. It had been a bit of a circus, a bit of a charade all morning. And still, Pharaoh wasn't pacified. Still, Pharaoh was troubled. And it was he that had called for Joseph. All the staff would have remembered what it was like with the chief cupbearer and baker. They would remember you don't want to cross Pharaoh. So bearing in mind he was particularly troubled in this morning, they'd been on ultra nervous probably around him. And so probably as they brought Joseph into the palace, as they kind of were there clothing him and getting him kind of sorted out, they were probably warning him about what was happening, letting him know that something was amiss. They may not have known the details, but they certainly were able to at least warn him about what was going on. So as Pharaoh speaks to Joseph, he cuts right to the point. He says, look, I've had these dreams. And Joseph has a choice to make at this moment. Did you notice again how it was described? Pharaoh says to Joseph, you are a man who I believe can interpret dreams. Would have been tempting, wouldn't it, for Joseph to say, well, yeah, that's true. To take the credit and to play down the God thing. Remember, he is a Hebrew. He was a Hebrew slave. And he was in Egypt. The Egyptians didn't believe in Yahweh. And so it would have been quite difficult for Joseph to actually own up to that, to recognize that. And the consequences, potential consequences of that, could have been death. He could have played down the God thing a little bit and said, well, I'll take the credit, but when the time's right, I'll kind of make it right and I'll make sure that people know that it's God that's given me those interpretations. But I'll go along with what the Pharaoh is saying at this point. But that wasn't Joseph. That would not be acting with integrity. He had put God first in everything, all the way through his life. He had sought to do the right thing, to say the right thing, even though there were consequences for him. So why change now? And so he nails his colours to the mask. He is God's servant. He knows it is God that gives him the interpretation. He said that in chapter 40, verse 8. It is God who owns interpretations. It's not me. It's not Joseph. And so he points Pharaoh to God and says to Pharaoh, look, Pharaoh, it's not me. I cannot do it, but God can. The God that I worship, the God that I believe in, the God of the Hebrew nation can do it. As a man of integrity, he immediately gives God the honor and the credit. He immediately points to God. Even though there was a risk that it could end him back in prison or even impaled like the chief baker. What about us? I know from my own journey, my own experience, there are times where it's quite challenging and difficult to actually stand up for what's true. It's quite easy to play along with it and go along with the kind of the status quo and then drop in the fact that we're kind of Christians a little bit later when it's a bit safer. As we live in a world that's becoming more and more hostile to the Christian faith and more hostile to the things that we believe the Bible tells us, the moral choices and decisions that we believe the Bible teaches us to stand on. Isn't there a danger in which we take a more, as we would argue, a balanced approach? Play along a little bit, go along with the world's perspectives on things in order to not ruffle feathers or to not get ourselves in trouble. The experiences that Joseph had and the ones that he'd gone through in his life made him and forged in him this integrity. That when he was presented with this opportunity, when he was presented with this moment of choice and of decision, he honoured God and he put God first. Regardless of the potential consequences, regardless of how it might affect him. As we come to the end of the story, we discover that Joseph is 30 years old. We first met Joseph way back at the age of 17 when he was tending the flocks of his father. And he brought a bad report, it says, about his brothers to his father. And on the back of that, his father raised him up and showed him favoritism, put the cloak on him, took him away from the field, protected him. 13 years have passed. And in those 13 years, he has become alienated from his family. He's been rejected by his brothers. He's been sold into slavery. He's served as a servant in Potiphar's house. We don't know how long that was. He was then thrown into prison, falsely accused of rape and sexual misdemeanors. Again, we don't know how long he served in prison. We do know that he's sat there for the last 2 years since the cupbearer and the baker were released, one to go back to serving and one to be to execution. But in biblical terms, Joseph is still quite young. Remember that Abraham was 100 when he and Sarah had Isaac. Moses was 80 when he took charge of the nation of Israel and led the people of Israel. Some would say that Joseph had lost perhaps his best years, stuck in a prison cell and in slavery. His 20s spent, you know, in that position, in a nation that was not his own, in a foreign land. Why would God allow that to happen to this young man of integrity, this young man of faith, this young man with whom Pharaoh says the Spirit of God is upon him and within him? What we discover here is that integrity is not about age. It's not about maturity. It's not about how long you've been a Christian. Integrity is about the choices that you make. The two things can go together, but the two things don't have to go together. And there can be people who are baby Christians, perhaps immature, therefore, in their faith, if you want to use that phrase, who actually demonstrate integrity. Whereas other Christians that have been Christians for years may have not the same integrity in how they live their lives. In Joseph's case, the years that he had spent in slavery, the years that he had spent in prison, prepared him for the task that was to come. The temptation, you see, for the person that was going to end up in charge of the food in Egypt, would have been to take the backhanders, to feather their own nests, to use that situation, as difficult as it was and as horrible as it was, to actually their own advantage. Who was going to challenge them? This person was only second to Pharaoh. Would Pharaoh mind if he took a couple of backhanders? Would Pharaoh mind if he took a cut of anything? As long as Pharaoh was okay, as long as the people were being fed and cared for, who cares? The temptation was there. And it's a temptation which hasn't gone away today. Joseph had shown that he was not going to compromise. He was not going to bow to pressure. Even though it might cost him his position, he would not give in. He was not prepared to sleep with Potiphar's wife, even though it might not have been noted by Potiphar, even though it might have been the done thing in society in that time, even though who was watching, even though it would end up with him potentially falling out of favour with Potiphar. But he did the right thing. Even though Pharaoh did not worship God, Joseph stood clearly on the truth that it was God who was going to give Pharaoh the interpretations that he wanted. Although he was 30, Joseph was a man of integrity. He would seek to do the right thing, seek to say the right thing. And when he served in that capacity, when God had elevated him to that position of second in the whole of Egypt, he would have integrity in how he conducted himself there. He would act with compassion and concern for those because he had been both privileged and a pauper and a prisoner. See, integrity is not about age. Don't think it's something you aspire to get to when you have been a Christian for so many years or you reach a certain age. Integrity is about a choice that you make right now. Will you do the right thing? Will you be the right kind of person? Will your character be true? Remember that definition. It's not about, it's about being complete and whole and pure, doing the right things. It's about having the right priorities in our lives, not giving in, not bending, not swaying with the crowd. Are we people of integrity? Are we people like Joseph who are stamped with and marked out by integrity? Now, when we experience tough times, those moments of challenge and of pain in our lives, as we were reminded last week, let us look up. Let us keep our eyes fixed upon Jesus, who endured the cross for us, as it says in Hebrews chapter 12, and who wants to present us faultless before his Father in heaven, Jude verse 24. The God that we worship, the God that we believe in, is a God who is for us and not against us. And when we're going through the tough times, he wants to use that for our good, to make us more like himself. Part of the purifying and the refining process to make us and present us faultless before God. In our lives, let us make choices that honor God, that put God first, even though it's difficult, even though it might feel like a compromise of our own positions. Let's not compromise on our faith in God. Let's recognize that every good and perfect gift is from above, James chapter 1, verse 17. That includes the gifts that you have as an individual. Those gifts are from God. So use them for his glory. Use them to honor him. Don't use them to feather your own nest, to pursue your own and make yourself your own agenda and make yourself look good. Do it for God's glory. Whatever that looks like for you. But let's honor God. Let's give him the credit and the honor that he deserves. And let us choose, whatever age we are, however long we've been Christians, whether we're young in our faith or we've been going for a long time, let's choose to be people of integrity, people of honor and character that choose to do the right thing, have a right attitude. But actually, it's more about how we get something done than what we get done. They're more concerned about the process than the end product. Let's be people like Joseph, marked out and stamped with integrity. Now, the truth is, Joseph wasn't like that all the time. The truth is, none of us are like it all the time, and we fall and we fail. But the choices that we make are choices to honor God, to put him first, to look to him, to allow him to shape us and to change us. And when we do that, then we discover that he takes us and uses us and blesses us. As we reflect on that, we're going to either sing or listen to a song. It's one haven't done for a while, but it's one we've sung many times over the years. It's "As the deer pants for water, so my soul longs after you. You alone are my heart's desire." You know, this is, for Joseph, this was the essence of this. This is the heart beat of his story. It was serving and searching after God first. And so Pharaoh could say to him, "The Spirit of God is in you." Let's either sit and listen or just sing along if you'd like to do that. And use this as a response to allow God to help us to make choices that put him first.